From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And on today's show, the rise and fall of a Latin king.
I introduce myself as Antonio Fernandez, you know, and then everybody's response is King Tone.
King Tone as in Latin King Tone. The Latin Kings are one of the most well-known gangs in the United States. They started out as a loosely formed organization in the 1950s, but most people didn't know about them until the late 1980s, when they gained a reputation as a dangerous criminal gang. Somewhere between then and now, this gang became something else, something altogether different. On today's show, what happens when a violent street gang tries to go legit? And the story starts in East New York, Brooklyn, with Antonio Fernandez.
If you could see East New York in those times, it's the block where 7 buildings are burned or abandoned and 2 are functioning. It was hard to survive.
Although his neighborhood in Brooklyn may have been a tough place, Antonio grew up in a fairly stable family. They raised him with the idea that because he was the boy, he should be independent.
Of course, you know, in a Latino family, you know, it was a famous saying, the women stay at home and the man goes take care of business in the street. You know, not that it's bad, but we go hustle, we do the work. And my father was very much a legal working. When I go to work and they cleaning the house and they doing the house duties, you do your boy duties and go there and hustle with the boys, play baseball.
While his father was at work, the guys on the streets became his male role models.
And I just looked up to them so much, so I said, I need a big brother.
And those big brothers, they weren't the best role models. Reporter Sam Anderson picks up the story.
Antonio became a runner for a local weed dealer, and it turned out he was a lot better at dealing drugs than he was at school. He was struggling with the English language, and he had a hard time fitting in with the black kids and the white kids at school.
And us third-generation Puerto Ricans are mixed. We're part of America, but we're not. You know what I mean?
Eventually, he dropped out to sell drugs and saw that the cash flow far surpassed what his father was making as a bread delivery man.
I got to make money so I could compete and I could show my father that I'm a man and I could support myself without him having to buy my Adidas, my pants, my coat, because I could buy it my damn self.
Over the next few years, Antonio embraced his life as a drug dealer. He enjoyed the parties, the drugs, the girls, the money, all the cliches of the gangster lifestyle.
And what I'm trying to show you, 17, you think you know to the adults who have experienced what you haven't yet in the game. Take advantage of your young mind. And in some way, I was introduced to crack-based cocaine.
Antonio became addicted to crack, and his life spiraled out of control. He lost his friends, spent all his money, and made enemies on the street. He also started to get arrested for petty crimes. Then, at 19, he was sentenced to 3 years in jail.
When Rockers Island came, it was like, man, you know when you're in a bad dream, you go, do I want to wake up now? Do I have to face this? And I think the judge's eyes and the sentence and all that, I looked at him, I said, this could be a start.
A start to getting clean. But his first stint at Rikers would also be the start of something bigger. That's where he would meet members of the Latin Kings gang for the first time.
Of course, you go in as a dude with no mother and father, and you don't get commissary, and you were smoking crack, and your weight is down. You know, you could become a prey real quick in those places. So after that, I just seen some guys that, you know, attracted me, and they knew the Puerto Ricans who knew the game, and they knew what was going on.
At school, he didn't fit in with the black kids or the white kids. But in jail, he found himself surrounded by Puerto Ricans. Antonio's cell was in Latin Kings territory.
There, they were the example for the Latino. They were the ones who were fighting for our rights. They were fighting so we could get the phone. They were fighting so nobody would take our sneakers. They were empowering us with lessons of who we were, what was Puerto Rico, who was Oscar Lopez, who was Lolita Lebron, who was the Young Lords. Why are we Puerto Rico? Who was our ancestors? My mother never had time to tell me these things.
In the early 90s, the prison population was expanding like the U.S. had never seen before, and a lot of the inmates were joining gangs to help them survive on the inside. But for some, like Antonio, the gangs weren't just about survival. They were also about identity. At the time, the leader of the Latin Kings was a guy named Luis Felipe, a.k.a. King Blood. He was imprisoned in upstate New York, where he was serving a sentence for manslaughter. King Blood was born in Cuba and immigrated to Chicago. He joined the Latin Kings in the 1980s, but like a lot of street gangs, they didn't start out as a criminal enterprise. In the 50s, they formed to fight prejudice against Latino immigrants in Chicago. So when King Blood wanted to move up in the gang, he showed interest in bringing it back to its original roots. He wanted Latinos to be proud of their heritage, to learn about where they came from, how their ancestors were oppressed by colonialism, and how that oppression still continued. And all of that interested Antonio.
You walk into a place that others have experienced how to self-educate themselves and look for the books that they wasn't giving us in our schools and our things to make them believe not only in the American dream, but of your grassroots and who you are and how to find to attach the American dream to who you are. And I found that identity when they said, Latinos are strong. You know, you got black blood in you. You know, they used to say the trades. They gave me a history that what made me Puerto Rican, what made me Antonio Fernandez, I had an identity. That's where we come from. Because I heard Puerto Rico, but did I really ever see it? Did I really know what it was? Then I started looking in the books for what my island looked like.
Antonio Fernandez became somebody new. This boy from East New York who dropped out of school because he couldn't read had joined the prison gang and was suddenly reading about history and politics.
So you find purpose. You find meaning. And most of all, in your lessons, you start, what I'm saying they gave me was that I could learn. I knew how to read.
Although he was inspired by King Blood's philosophy, Antonio never actually met King Blood in person. But they got to know each other by writing letters back and forth. It was like King Blood was a prophet, and Antonio was one of his disciples. But shortly after joining the gang, Antonio got out of jail. King Blood, however, remained incarcerated. Once outside, Antonio would find out that living by the principles of the kings on the outside was a lot more complicated. If you were a Latino in prison, you didn't have a choice. You joined so you had brothers to protect you from being attacked by the white gangs or the black gangs. But on the outside, you did have a choice. You weren't being attacked on a daily basis. So Antonio faced this question, remain loyal to King Blood or do his own thing?
All of us young guys who became members, we find ourselves being sent home to New York. As this new identity, got this new power, this new idea, but we really didn't know how to match it and the structure we should have in the street. Two different worlds now. Freedom was involved.
There were close to 2,000 Latin King members outside of the prison system in New York by the mid-90s. So many that they separated themselves from the original Latin Kings in Chicago. They were still a totally criminal enterprise. They engaged in drug dealing, prostitution, and other gang crimes. And they had their own colors, black and gold. They divided themselves into a hierarchy. The top leader was called the Inca. That was King Blood. And even though he was still in jail, he called all the shots. There were also tribes, or groups based on the boroughs where the gang members lived. The Brooklyn tribe, the Queens tribe, the Bronx tribe, and each of the tribes had their own leader. These tribal leaders came together as the supreme team. This was the inner circle. The only group that didn't have a representative at the leader's table was the Latin Queens, the female version of the gang. Most of the time, the supreme team did what King Blood said. But not always. Sometimes they did their own thing. So King Blood began to grow paranoid. He suspected a coup was on the horizon.
But as he found out, with freedom in the street, leaders could choose to do what they want.
A power struggle ensued, with local leaders rebelling against King Blood's orders and King Blood retaliating, often through violence.
So you got power-hungry leaders that know the potential because they've seen it in jail. How do we lead this mob? How do we make them believe in us? And this was what's happening in the street. We're finding our identity. And in finding this identity, we committed terrible mistakes. We self-mutilated each other. I mean, we were eating each other alive. So in that, we fought each other like a civil war.
To keep his generals in line, King Blood enforced a rule called Terminate on Sight, where he would name a person, and the next time a Latin king saw that person, they had to murder him. Over time, King Blood ordered the murder of 7 Latin kings from his prison cell, and 3 of them were killed. One of the victims was decapitated, his hands and his gang tattoo cut off, and his corpse lit on fire. It was during this tumultuous time that King Tone rose through the ranks. And while King Blood was willing to murder his own generals if they stepped out of line, King Tone says he was a pacifist. He was riding a thin line between remaining loyal to King Blood and criticizing the use of violence in the gang. All of the bloodshed was attracting the attention of the police, and eventually King Blood was charged with ordering murders from within prison. By 1996, all of the other top gang leaders were swept up in indictments, ranging from organized crime and racketeering to murder. King Tone was essentially the last man standing. So King Blood made him Inca of New York, the second highest post in the gang. That's when Antonio Fernandez became King Tone.
Coming up on Latino USA, the rise of a king and the changes that come with it.
Why don't we have the first meeting where we all come, all the tribes, and we show each tribe who we are and what we are, and we let them shake up.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Duolingo, offering the Duolingo Spanish podcast, featuring fascinating, true stories of travels with unexpected turns, plans unraveled, and destinations unknown. It's designed to help you learn Spanish. The stories are told in slow, easy Spanish with regular breaks from an English narrator. Life lessons told through language. Check it out at podcast.duolingo.com or search for Duolingo on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This, with the recommendation for another podcast for you to check out, namely How I Built This. Every week, I talk to the people behind some of the most inspiring companies and brands in the world, with stories of incredible persistence, grit, and insight. You can find How I Built This on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before the break, Antonio Fernandez had just become King Tone, the second highest post in the Latin Kings gang back in the 1990s. After taking the crown, he was about to take the gang in a new direction. And as reporter Sam Anderson found out, King Tone had a plan.
He wanted to convince the gang to reject violence and drug dealing and focus on the thing that got him to join in the first place, Latino history and identity.
And that's when I had to start self-articulating the vision without it being there. What would love look like in the gang? What would be tolerance? What would be respect? What would be unity like?
So he sprang into action.
Why don't we have the first meeting where we all come, all the tribes, and we show each tribe who we are and what we are, and we let them shake up?
King Tone wanted to bring all the Latin kings together to the same place, an idea that was completely unheard of at the time. So he started to hold these meetings where everyone was invited, and he called them universals. The first ones took place in parks and other public places, but this attracted the attention of the cops. So they took the meetings to a more private setting, a church. There was a church called St. Mary's in Washington Heights, where the congregants there told the priest about what King Tone was trying to do. The priest's name was Luis Barrios, and he decided to let them hold the meetings at his church. This made sense to the Latin Kings because religion has always been a part of the gang, and they would often pray at their meetings. So they began showing up by the thousands to hear King Tone. Never before had all the Latin kings from around New York showed up at the same meeting. But there was one problem. The church was directly across the street from a police station. Barrios said the cops sat in on the first few meetings.
There was harassing them and checking and stopped in the street to search, stop, frisk.
But after a while, the cops just sort of lost interest.
And after that, he said, I don't know why you call this a street gang. This is not a street gang. This kid is just talking what everybody else is talking. They never came back again.
Barrios is still a priest and also a professor at John Jay College. His colleague is a sociologist named Dave Brotherton. And they became so interested in what King Tone was doing that they wrote a book about him. When it came out in 2001, it was super controversial at the time because they claimed that the Latin Kings were not a gang and instead they were a social organization. Here's Dave Brotherton.
The police would always say, you know, because I was teaching police officers at John Jay, you know, some of them, and they would say, yeah, but, you know, they're just pulling the wool over your eyes. You know, they're just having you on. You know, you're just a naive liberal, right? I said, well, but, you know, over time you get to see the truth of people, right? I mean, you can't pull the wool over your eyes all the time or create that kind of facade. At certain points, things will slip. You know, someone might get killed, someone might get beaten up. Something might happen, and it didn't.
This was a turning point for the Latin Kings. King Tone had solidified his power, and he had a captive audience. Now he just had to figure out how to execute the change from street gang to social group. A lot of what he did was controversial at the time, and he ran up against a lot of pushback from the Latin Kings. One of the first things he did was get rid of Terminate on Sight, the fatal punishment that King Blood seemed to hand down on a whim. And remember the Latin Queens? They got tired of some of the gender divisions and spoke up about it. So King Tone brought them into the leadership for the first time. King Tone also organized the Kings to march in the AIDS Walk Parade, and for this, he ran up against the homophobic attitudes of some of the members. They also instituted strict educational requirements for the Peewees, the underage members of the Kings. It used to be that their parents would have to sign a document, and then the kids would get a necklace, meaning they were part of the group. But now, in order to get the necklace, they had to keep their grades up.
So that was a very strong motivation for a lot of these kids that were 12, 13, 14 years old.
But it wasn't enough to change the Latin Kings from the inside. He also needed to show the public that they were changing, that they were evolving into this new thing, this social group. So what he did was he reached out to some of the original leaders of the Young Lords, who played a big role in Puerto Rican empowerment in the 60s. And they said the Latin Kings should link up with some other grassroots organizations. One of them was a group called the Mothers Against Police Brutality. They were started by the mother of a man named Anthony Baez.
Iris Baez's son, Anthony, was killed by a New York City police officer using an unauthorized chokehold.
In 1994, Anthony was tossing a football when a stray throw hit a police car. An argument ensued, and NYPD officer Francis Lavoti grabbed him by the neck and choked him to death. So these mothers were having protests, and King Tone reached out to see if he could join them. At first, they thought working with a street gang would undermine their credibility, but then they realized the Latin Kings could bring the numbers. King Tone and the mothers wanted to stage a rally, but first, King Tone had to teach the Latin Kings how to do a peaceful march. So one of the people he reached out to train the Latin Kings was a man named Charles Barron. He's a black community leader who's been involved in New York politics for decades. Today, Barron is a New York State Assembly member. When I called to ask him about King Tone, he remembered that time well.
Well, I remember inviting King Tone and others to join me on the steps of City Hall when I was running for council. He was actually getting them jobs. He was actually getting them placed in employment. He actually really did the training. He really did organize around political things. It was real as far as we can see, but I think what people don't understand, when you're in that kind of lifestyle, it's not like you could drop it overnight. As long as they're gangbanging, the police may do their little arrests here and there, but they seem to be more fearful of them when they get political and turn against police brutality and want to get into a righteous, productive life. Then all of a sudden, here comes the wrath of the police department.
So this is a time in New York City when police community tensions have never been higher. In the fall of 1996, there were these two trials going on at the same time. Francis Lavoti, the officer that choked Anthony Baez, was facing murder charges. And King Blood was also standing trial for the murders he ordered from jail. So King Tone put the new training to use, organizing other kings to peacefully protest in the area surrounding the federal courthouse where King Blood was standing trial. He thought that if he could show the authorities that the Latin Kings were politically oriented and peaceful, it might influence the judge's decision.
I put 700 brothers at attention in front of the courthouse. Every lunchtime for 29 days, we would switch 50 out and put switch 50 in the courtroom because that was what allowed.
While all this was happening, a Bronx judge made a decision in police officer Lavoti's case. He was acquitted and the murder charges were dropped. The Mothers Against Police Brutality were outraged.
As community outrage rose and a protest campaign was planned, King Tone came to see Ms. Baez.
When the day of the big rally finally arrived, the Kings were all set to march side by side with the mothers. Ms. Baez, the mother of the boy who was choked, led the other mothers to the 46th precinct in the Bronx, where Officer Lavoti was stationed. The protest started out small, maybe 100 or 200 people. But then the Latin Kings started to show up.
7 p.m. Now the big task force 18-wheelers out because they're like, who the hell invited these guys?
They showed up en masse, surrounding the mothers in a sea of black and gold. Nobody knew what to expect next. There were now more than 1,000 people at the protest, and each of the mothers took to the mic to tell their story. The crowd listened and cheered. Then it was King Tone's turn.
We can't depend on politicians, but we sure can depend on the community.
It was my moment to close it. It was my moment to get victory, right? So my emotions was like, you see the Kings prove to the church, you know, I'm thinking of these great things to say to denounce everybody. So by instinct, I said, what is the first thing that we do that none of these people think we do and the feds never told them we do? We pray. So I said, crowns up, the warrior's prayer.
The Latin Kings knelt down and held their hands in the air. in the shape of a crown, the universal gang sign for Latin kings.
Be silent, and they heard one voice start, Almighty Father, King of Kings, we the Latin kings. And they were like, you could see the faces of mothers and grandmothers crying like, the guns are pointed at us, we're the toughest people there, we made it happen, and we decided to pray. And I let them know that we're not the aggressor here. We're the ones praying, look above us, who got the guns? Who's the ones who's willing to shoot if we make the wrong move? Don't ever forget it, that we came here to serve today. And we got up, we set our moderes, and we walked off into the night.
King Tone was finally able to show the world and his leader, King Blood, that the Latin kings were changing, that they were evolving away from violence.
So all this positive is like me telling him, you see us? You see where we're becoming? Your dream is alive. Look at the news. We are not savages, that we got a mind, that we got principles, that we just lost our way for a little bit. And I think that's when we taught New York City to accept us as their children, as their husbands, their wives, their sons.
Just a few weeks after the rally, King Blood's trial was coming to an end. King Tone and his followers were packed into the courthouse when the jury handed down the verdict. King Blood was found guilty on all charges. As he was led out of the courtroom in handcuffs, you could hear the chants of Amor de Rey, love of the king. When the trial was over, the Latin kings gathered in a circle on the courthouse steps, and in the middle was King Tone. It's time for a fresh start, he said. Now they can't hold our past against us. King Blood was sentenced to life plus 45 years in solitary confinement. It was completely unprecedented. Even the prosecution was shocked by the harshness of the sentence. Even though King Blood was a convicted murderer, responsible for the killing of at least three members of his own gang, those members never stopped supporting him. No matter how brutal he was, King Blood still had the loyalty of thousands of Latino gang members.
It's like in all your hope and everything, even though he wasn't the perfect example of it, but he was the engine behind my drive. You know, that was like that was what I fought to show and to live for. And then when I seen that he was looking back and he was like, after he heard the sentence, I remember his reply was, why don't you just kill me, to the judge? And the judge said, no, you don't deserve death. You deserve to live. And I laugh now because I could see the hate in what that kind of sentence.
So King Blood was sent to a supermax prison, and King Tone was left to keep leading the Latin kings. And for a little while, it seemed like the story would have a happy ending. But that's not how it went down.
My name is Steve Cohen. I, from 1991 to 1998, served in the U.S. Attorney's Office as an assistant United States attorney for the Southern District of New York. For a good portion of that time, I was chief of the violent gangs unit.
Cohen is one of the prosecutors who was closely involved in the Latin kings' investigations. He says he doesn't buy the idea that the Latin kings renounced crime.
If you look at the evidence that ended up being put forward at trial, you look at the dozens of pleas we took in connection with the Latin kings, there is no question that the members and the leadership of the Latin kings were involved in very serious crimes, narcotics trafficking, murders, assaults.
At the crack of dawn on May 14th, 1998, 1,000 federal and local law enforcement agents spread out across New York City. They arrested 94 Latin kings, including King Tone. This was the biggest single gang sweep in New York City history since Prohibition in the 20s. And according to a story in the New York Times, none of the Latin kings were charged with murder. About half of the charges were for felonies, and the rest were for misdemeanors. And it's unclear how many of the arrests, aside from King Tone, led to convictions. After the raid, police showed security camera footage of King Tone being involved in a drug sale. At one point in the video, the customer seems to be complaining about the quality of the drug, and you can hear King Tone's voice explain that there were rocks in the bag. The evidence was irrefutable.
They found out that I sold those drugs. It was all coming to a head. They came with their case, and they got like 100 of us.
So they charged him with conspiracy to possess and distribute heroin, and he pleaded guilty.
And I look back and I said, the nation never made me do nothing I didn't want to do. They're not the reason I'm here. My petty ways got me here. And they all looked at me like, wow. You know, and I said, I'm proud of you. You know, y'all came this far. Now this is my mistake. I'm going to go pay for my mistake.
In line with minimum sentencing guidelines, the judge sentenced King Tone to 12 to 15 years in prison. His credibility as a reformer was undermined overnight. absence of King Tone's leadership, Professor Brotherton, who co-wrote the book about the Latin Kings, said the group, quote, totally imploded. And in a few years, it was a shadow of its former self. With no one to maintain the relationship with the Mothers Against Police Brutality, the rallies stopped and the gang turned inward. They stopped showing up at the big universals, where all the Latin Kings would meet as a group. Even though King Tone fully acknowledges his guilt in committing the drug sale, he continues to believe that he was unfairly targeted by the FBI for his role as a leader of a power group. I reached out to the FBI, both the local New York office and the federal office, and they both declined to comment for the story.
What was unusual about the Latin Kings is, unlike most of the street gangs that we prosecuted, where the very core and essence of the organization existed in most instances to engage in criminal activity, that, in all candor, was not the organizing principle of the Latin Kings, if you took them at their word.
Steve Cohen, the prosecutor we heard from earlier.
Different kings, different leaders of the organization probably had different motivations in mind. But if you looked at what the organization expressed as their reason for being, and even those who were involved in criminal acts, I think there were several of them, maybe many of them, who thought we may be involved in criminal activity, but there's a broader purpose here. And that purpose is to engage in a kind of civic opportunity, advocacy, to create an environment in which people felt a sense of belonging, to become a surrogate family. All of that was true, and I don't mean to be disparaging or overly disparaging of the Latin Kings.
I just want to pause here for a second. A federal prosecutor, the same guy who helped put King Blood in solitary confinement for life, says he doesn't want to be too disparaging of the Latin Kings.
Do I wish that Antonio Fernandez had the ability to have stayed out of trouble, had the maturity to avoid something that he may argue was minimal, but nevertheless was a serious crime? Yeah. I mean, I think that this is a guy who probably could have made a big difference. Unfortunately, he got himself, and we can debate the reasons why, into the very activity that he should have been involved in trying to prevent. And that's what's tragic about these cases.
For 10 years, King Tone remained incarcerated, where he earned a college degree. And in 2007, he even got married.
In the 3 years that they put me in solitary confinement without visits, without phone calls, and they kept me locked down from, I used that time to look in the mirror and to challenge my beliefs, my foundations, the ones that were no good, I renewed them and I revolved. Because when you're alone for 3 years and you can't see nobody, you can't lie no more to nobody. You could only be truthful. And it was the hardest 3 years I did, but it gave me the foundation that when I stepped onto the regular population of the jail, I again got back to my values.
On April 10th, 2009, King Tone was let out on supervised release. He spent 3 years working menial jobs and trying not to break parole by passing regular drug tests, not wearing yellow, and not visiting school grounds. In the petition for his release, which I obtained a copy of, there was one extra provision that seemed custom-tailored to King Tone. It said he was not allowed to appear in any courtroom unless he has a scheduled case. It was like the government was making sure he couldn't cause a ruckus by packing the courtroom like he did with King Blood back in the day.
As soon as 2012 came, 13, I finished parole. I was free. I first got in 1986. I was put on paper. It lasted to all the way to 2013. Never did I thought as a youth offender that I was going to be in the system. To 2013.
When King Tone got out of jail, the world was a different place, and he was a different person. For one thing, he was no longer the leader of the Latin Kings, and his name was no longer King Tone. Now, it's just Tone, short for Antonio. And as fate would have it, one of his first jobs after getting released was in the same neighborhood where he grew up.
And I'm a counselor there in East New York on the corner of Pinckney and Pennsylvania. 10 blocks from where I grew up and I committed my first dope sale, where I became the strongest king, I was now in a program on the second floor providing jobs, education for any gang member that was in East New York. Imagine that. The full circle. But I grew up. I grew out, and I never left the neighborhood. I'm still a king.
He says, I'm still a king, but I'm a mature king.
Thank you to reporter Sam Anderson for that story. Today, Antonio Fernandez lives in Washington, D.C., where he works as a counselor for young people in the criminal justice system. The nonprofit he created in jail is now contracted by a government organization that works rehabilitating youth. And as for the Latin Kings, King Tone's reforms may have been temporary, but the gang itself is still around and still involved in criminal enterprises. Despite efforts by law enforcement to eradicate them, the gang has spread beyond New York and Chicago. And today, there are around 40,000 members across the United States. The Rise and Fall of a Latin King was reported by Sam Anderson. It was produced and edited by Fernanda Chavarri, with additional editing by Juleika Lantigua Williams. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Andres Caballero, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, Sayer Quevedo, Noam Hassenfeld, and Maggie Freeling. Our senior editor is Nadia Raymond. Additional engineering help this week from Stephanie LeBeau. Our engineer and music editor is Cornelius McMoyler. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our brand new theme music is by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, we'll see you on social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Winecode Foundation, supporting efforts that strengthen and enrich culture, community, and the natural environment.
¿Qué tú quieres? ¿Un Big Mac? Ah, okay.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA.
That first morning, the townspeople detained five truck drivers. After hearing about the insurrection, La Familia reacted. They sent gunmen to retake Chedán, but the townspeople fought them off with rocks, fireworks, and a few old guns.
That's next time on Latino USA.
Just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.